Bluegrass Jam Along is proud to be sponsored by Collings Guitars and Mandolins, each and every one built from the sound up in Austin, Texas. This episode is also brought to you by Peghead Nation, the home of roots music instruction. If you want to improve your playing, join me and thousands of other pickers getting better every day at pegheadnation.com. Hi, this is Matt, and you're listening to Bluegrass Jam Along, the podcast for anyone and everyone who loves bluegrass. My guest on Bluegrass Jam Along this week is Missy Raines, who is probably the most decorated bass player in the history of IBMA. Singer, songwriter, band leader, and has a new album out called Highlander, which I'm delighted we're going to chat about tonight. Missy, welcome to Bluegrass Jam Along.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
I've been looking forward to this. I've been listening to your record for the last couple of weeks, and it's always great to talk about a record that I like, but I also love it when you get sent a bit of blurb through with the record to give you a bit of context. And there's a beautiful thing in there that I'd like to just read out and sort of talk about, if that's okay. And it says, "If music can be a place, then bluegrass is also where I grew up and my favorite vantage point, standing gently on the shoulders of its tradition. From here, I feel a connection to my roots. From here, I can see the whole world. From here, it feels like I've come home." And that's a glorious thing. And just the idea of this record as a homecoming, there's so many things that makes me think about, from the journey you've been on to come home from, to what coming home feels like, to, you know, all of that. And bluegrass, I guess maybe a place to start, because bluegrass is a world you grew up in. And as somebody who comes from outside of the world of bluegrass, I find it fascinating talking to people who've never not known it. And that's certainly been your case, hasn't it?
It is. And this album has been a bit of a journey for me in so many ways. And it does feel like a homecoming. But on the other hand, I never really left to begin with. So there is that. But I have been endlessly reconnected with some of my most favorite memories and times growing up, when I was just first hearing bluegrass, through the process of making this album, through the process of actually having just this band and touring with this band and coming up with material, coming up with songs, just, you know, getting in touch with all the things that mattered to me most. It was sort of like I started to process and really examine the sounds that meant the most to me with bluegrass, because bluegrass is such a it's a wide field, you know, to me. And I've said before, you know, I see it through a very wide lens, but there are certain sounds that are associated with it that I connect completely and deeply to, the sounds that I heard when I was a kid, when I was first hearing it, and those feelings that you get when you're hearing something for the first time and it's moving you so passionately. So I've been reliving a lot of that, and it's been amazing. It's also something that just happens like almost every night then when we're out touring, because I'm playing with these amazing players who, have, you know, sort of studied and are really honoring that tradition in the fullest sense.
And I love that. This, the idea of like a homecoming to a place that you sort of never left at all, like the idea that you can go on a journey of all, like, physical journey, you know, you moved away from home to be part of the music world, you know, a musical journey away from the roots of some of it, and the whole journey you go on to find yourself where you are, and you've sort of never been anywhere and yet you've been everywhere at the same time. And there's so many lovely thoughts within that, you know, and that idea of And I guess there's, I find it, I'm really interested in the idea of your musical journey, particularly from being a bass player through to being a singer, songwriter, and band leader. And the layers and kind of timelines of all of that feel like it's something that's developed over quite a while for you.
Oh, it really has. You know, I saw myself for years as a bass player, and that was very fulfilling. And I enjoyed it immensely. I enjoyed being that sort of, you know, typical place, sort of in the back of the stage, you know, behind three or four or five people, and like being back there and sort of holding up the fort, so to speak. And I still love that. I love that position. I actually love that more than I love being in the front. But I recognized that there were so many things that I wanted to express musically, thoughts I had, ideas, and that I knew that I needed to move up front in order to have the opportunity to do those things. But oh yeah, like if I could do all of this from the back row, I would do that in a heartbeat.
And are there many sort of like role models for bass player band leaders over the years? It seems to be a relatively uncommon thing compared to some of the other instruments.
Yeah, I mean, within the bluegrass world, I don't know of any. I'm not thinking of like bass player who've definitely just gone out. There's some great bass players who sort of front. Well, the person I think of most the first time every time is like Wayne Taylor of Blue Highway, who's sort of one of the main singers of, not the only, but one of the main singers of that band, and always standing in the middle, and they all stand in a row. Mm. And he was actually one of the first people that I remember hearing, you know, in that setting where I like he was such a good, great player, but such a great singer. And it was just, it was holding the band together in a way that was really aspiring. But yeah, for me as a young girl, playing bass, I saw other bass players. I saw other women bass players, Ruth McClain, Cheryl White. They were huge inspirations to me. But they were part of a band, then through the years, of course, there were several women leading bands, but they weren't playing bass. So and I will say that being a bass player and trying to sort of lead a song, I mean, everyone, the cliche is that, oh yeah, the bass player sort of leads everything and everyone follows the bass player. I haven't always found that to be true. I guess I would say that, like, I think from a musical situation, it's a lot easier to lead a song in a way if you're playing particularly a guitar. I mean, because the guitar speaks the chords so much better and gives the idea, it paints the picture that you're trying to, you know, express with the song. So like if I'm playing something and I'm like, it's in G minor and I play a G because I have one note to express that G minor, nobody can hear that. And you know, unless the guitar is playing that chord or someone else is playing that chord, but the guitar, I think, speaks it the best. So, it makes sense why there's so many leaders of bands who play guitar and not bass.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, I went to see the Transatlantic Sessions tour over here at the weekend, and Daniel Kimbrough is playing bass with them, and Jerry Douglas brought him out front for a song for him to sing it, and it was just him and Jerry. And watching a bass player kind of accompany a song with only one other instrument, like, it was a fascinating thing to see.
Yeah. You know, he's just fantastic. Yeah. And I think that one of the things that helped me prepare for this role was I spent about 8 years touring with a great guitar player named Jim Hurst. And he and I did toured as a duo. And that was my introduction into being up front, being, one of the main singers. And that opened up, when it's just two instruments, the bass and another instrument, there's so much room, so much space to do things that I would never normally do when there are more instruments to fill up that space. So it gives you all this leeway to do and what you want. And so that was a great experience working with Jim and being able to just explore that kind of space. But then, you know, going in reverse, coming out of that and being in a 5-piece band, I feel like my role is completely, completely different in terms of what I play, or at least how many notes I play.
Yeah. And the more people you've got, the more sort of different channels of communication are going on at any time. And, you know, if there's two of you or three of you, you can little nod or a, you know, an eye movement and you can take another direction. But with five people, it's harder to steer that kind of thing, isn't it?
Can be, yeah.
And I find it, what you were just saying about if you could do it all from the back of the stage, you would. I find that fascinating because that sort of implies a little bit of tension in there between wanting to be out there expressing something and also wanting to not be out there expressing something at the same time, which sort of tells me that, you know, with these songs and sort of fronting a band, you know, you really want to be there. We'll be right back with you just after this. We'll be right back with you just after this. Collings Guitars has been a long-time supporter of the bluegrass community, from collaborating with artists to sponsoring festivals big and small. And now, by sponsoring Bluegrass Jam Along. Handmade in Austin, Texas, every Collings guitar and mandolin that leaves the shop is built from the sound up, and the team love seeing a Collings in the hands of players of all levels, from local musicians to world-renowned pickers. Visit collingsguitars.com for more. This episode is also brought to you by Peghead Nation, the home of roots music instruction. With 65 streaming video courses for guitar, mandolin, banjo, fiddle, dobro, bass and ukulele from some of the leading names in acoustic music, Peghead Nation has something for every picker. You'll learn the tunes and techniques you need to join in at jams and play the music you love, plus advanced techniques like improvisation, theory and ear training. Your first course is just $20 per month and you can add more for $10 a month. Sign up for any course and get your first month free with the promo code JAMALONG, all one word. Join thousands of other players, including me, who are advancing on their instruments and having more fun playing the roots music they love at pegheadnation.com.
Yeah, and I think it just comes from so much of what I do. It feels very collaborative, and so that's definitely the mindset that I came into the music with from a very young age, was that I saw the bass as a very collaborative instrument. And what I enjoyed about it was how I could make everyone else sound good. And now I didn't, you know, when I was really young, I, of course, was trying to play everything I knew. So I wasn't always I didn't start out with that kind of maturity, thinking about how I can make everyone else sound better. But I did grow into that, and that was part of the lure for me. And as I developed, my maturity in the music, then it was like, oh yeah, this is, if I do this, it makes everything sound really great. So it's that collaborative point of view, and I think that's part of what I love about being behind somebody else and just sort of watching them, you know, do something and then imagining what we can do to raise that up. But when you're in the front and you have people who are thinking that same way behind you, that's a great feeling too. I mean, I wouldn't give that for anything. because that's the best feeling in the world when you're out front but you're being lifted by the other players. It feels great, and having a chance to say or do what it is that you really want to say or do is pretty powerful. And so, and that was why I decided that I really needed to have my own band, as I was hoping that I had enough creative stuff to present to the world, and enjoy doing it. I was playing when I decided to start my first band. I was playing with Claire Lynch, and I'd been working with her over the course of about 12 years, and I loved her so much, and loved her music. I learned so much from her. And I really enjoyed being in the back of that band, and I often joke that, you know, I walked away from a perfectly great job to start a band that with really no promises at all, like no guarantees that it was going to work or that anyone would care. But I knew I had to do it.
And it's interesting because just listening to this record, like the first thing that struck me about it was, even though there are lots of guests on it, and there's songs that you've written, there's co-writes, there's songs that other people have written, there's other vocalists on it, it feels like a band record from the start till the end. It doesn't feel like a collection of songs with mostly the same people on them. It feels like a band with other things brought in. And it's such a great sound.
That's so great to hear, because that is exactly what we wanted. I wanted that so much, and I'm so glad to hear that it feels that way.
And it feels that way from like the first, like that first mandolin kickoff that Tristan plays is so kind of such a statement of intent of like, here we come. Like it's, you know, that just that it's got such a directness to it. And it's that you're in from the first bar. It's like, here we go, come with us, you know. And it'd be really cool just for a minute to talk about the band, who you've got and sort of how that came together. Because I know Tristan already. I've interviewed Tristan before. He's, you know, a fascinating guy and a really good mandolin player. But can you just sort of tell us who else you've got and how you sort of assembled that bunch of people?
Yeah. So on guitar is Ben Garnett, and Ben and I have been playing together the longest of all of the band. And he started playing some gigs with me in probably around 2017. And I was sort of in transition between configurations, and we were going out as a trio at that time. And he's just amazing, an amazing musician and an amazing artist in and of himself. You know, has his own thing going, just released his first all original material album last year, and has working on a new one this year. And he's just, I can't say enough about him and what he brings to this band. His own music is influenced maybe a little bit by elements of bluegrass, but definitely not bluegrass. But what he brings to this band is just powerful. Banjo, Eli Gilbert. And Eli, I often say he just simply plays everything that I want to hear on the banjo. I really mean that. It's just like he just has such a great sense of what's needed in the songs that we're doing. I really love the has a strong leaning towards a J.D. Crowe approach, but it's very also. Fulfilled a lot with, you know, the Scruggs approach and all those things combined. And at the same time, he's bringing his own voice through on the banjo. So I think that's an amazing accomplishment. And I've just really loving playing with him on fiddle. And doing a lot of singing is Ellie Hawkinson. And oh my gosh, you know, Ellie has transformed this band in my mind, because she came in with her voice, and but not just her voice, but her her ear and her amazing ability to just sort of guide us, you know, to create these great harmonies. For me, singing was something that I didn't actively pursue until much later in life. So I haven't been singing really my whole life. I was singing, but I really wasn't, my heart wasn't really in it. I wanted to do it, but I hadn't figured out how to make it my own. And so then, started making it my own, and was making some progress. But then, like I said, with having Ellie come in, she's got such a great voice, and singing with her has given me just an enormous amount of, like, a hit of confidence, really. And I'm just happy that I was able to accept it and just go with it, because it just feels so great now to sing with her.
Yeah, so I saw in the sort of the notes on the record that she sort of gets a credit for vocal coaching for the band, you know, and it's interesting to hear that. And because I was going to talk about your singing a little bit, because I don't know if this will make sense to you or not, but your voice for me has a similar quality, and I don't mean like a sound, but it reminds me of the way Doc Watson sings, and that you sing the way you speak and the way that Doc Watson does. And it just feels so direct and unadorned in a entirely positive way. There's not that sort of the big, and I love all the country singing with the big swoops and the big, you know, but it feels very like a very direct channel of communication, which is really nice.
Well, thank you. Yeah. No, I actually love hearing that. It's taken me a long time to just find how that was going to work for me. And I knew when I was a kid that, you know, I would hear particularly women who were singing at the time, singing these really high and demonstrative voices. And I just couldn't relate to it, because I loved it, but I knew that wasn't me, and I just had to find my way of doing it. So, and part of that was finding songs that worked for me, and that's taken a long time. I'm still working, still figuring that stuff out. But folks like Loy Lewis has helped me a lot. Just actually, talking to me about stuff like that. And Dee Dee Weiland has helped so much in with that sort of thing. But it's really, a lot of it has just been encouragement. Jim Hurst actually encouraged and, you know, helped so much with that aspect of the singing. Just I think just creating a space where you feel safe to do something and you can explore, and then if you give yourself the time to do it, then you can find your way. And that's what finally happened for me, was just allowing myself to figure it out. And I wanted to also say, you know, like I didn't get to talk about Tristan, but because he's so incredibly important to the sound, not just because he's fantastic player and, as you say, incredibly interesting person, but even just the role of the mandolin for me, that's one of the things that I think has been my keystone to everything that I've done as my own artist, whether some might consider it like some of the things that I've done to be traditional bluegrass or not traditional bluegrass, but the thing that has always grounded me in those decisions has always been actually the instrument of the mandolin. So when I started a band now back in 2009 called the New Hip, and besides me, the most important element of that band always in my head was who is going to play mandolin, what kind of style was the mandolin going to be, because in my mind bluegrass is Monroe centric. It's like it's always been about the mandolin player. And so for me, bluegrass is everything from Monroe to Sam Bush to David Grisman to, and now, of course, you know, Sierra and Chris and all those, Chris Thiele. But that's always been, those have been the center points for me. So in those early days, I chose people who played mandolins in a certain style to fit the New Hip music. And then, of course, in Allegheny, there isn't anybody else I'd rather have than Tristan. Absolutely. He just knows exactly what to play for this what we're doing. He gets it. And he gets it at such a level that, I mean, he's just so young. I don't know how he does it, but he gets it.
It's really funny because I was going to actually ask about mandolin players, just because sort of looking back through your records, you like particularly Jared Walker in the band, and Jared, like listen, listening to this record, and I was struck by Tristan. Like, there's a lot of tremolo and a lot of double stops, and Jared plays that way as well. And there's a bit of a resurgence of that with people like Harry Clark from East Nash Grass, and there's something incredibly rooted in that. And Tristan can obviously play lots of notes quickly and very cleanly, and all of that. But there's something about that mandolin kickoff at the beginning of the record, but also just the, you know, he plays like there's a real solidity to all of it. And it feels like a very old fashioned yet modern sound. Like it's the phrase that we talked about at the beginning, standing gently on the shoulders of tradition. Like I get that in spades from Tristan. It's lovely to listen to.
Yeah. 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 He gets it. And, he has done his homework, so to speak, because he's you know gone back and listened to those early masters, but he's still also innovating himself, and I think that's the key. It's like if you're you know there's a lot of players out there that their idea of like learning traditional bluegrass is to just learn it from the bluegrass album band, you know, versions, which I love. Like those, those are classic stuff and it's great. And I listen to it all the time. Those are masters playing that music, but they are paying tribute to something that came before them. And so if you go back and go to where they're, who they are paying tribute to and actually spend the time with that stuff. That's when I think you get it at a different level.
Yeah. It's funny. I love those bluegrass album band records, but I always feel they occupy the same space in the world of bluegrass that sort of Ella Fitzgerald and Frank Sinatra do in terms of jazz singing. And that those are like the Ella Fitzgerald songbooks and some of the Sinatra stuff. But those songs already existed and other people had sung them before. But there's this such a kind of flag in the ground, aren't they? And they are glorious records.
Oh, yeah. Some of my absolute favorites. And also, of course, you know, the people doing them, they're icons in and of themselves. I mean, they are the ones that, you know, they are also to be emulated, to be, you know, aspired to. They're aspirational. Absolutely. But, you know, they were also playing Flatt & Scruggs music, you know? So it's like, if you gotta go back and check that stuff out too, listen to them, you know, Curly Seckler, you know, singing and playing as well. And here, and you can hear, you know, why Doyle Lawson played a certain way. It was because of something else. So it's just all, it's just, I mean, I, that's what I love about music. It's just this process of handing, handing things down, hearing interpretations of stuff, and it's all, and it's also, it's all important. So yes, I think everyone should listen to the Bluegrass Album Bands. Absolutely. But I think they should also listen to what came before it as well.
Yeah. And it's interesting. You were talking about sort of singing and discovering your voice and sort of allowing yourself, because I, as somebody who's played music most of my life, and like, singing still terrifies me. I totally understand that. It's such, it's the most vulnerable thing you can do, because when you have an instrument that is also you, there's sort of, you know, you can't, there's nothing else to blame apart from you. And I wonder whether that is all, like, whether this, this similar journey with songwriting was, is also about having the confidence to know what it is you want to say and then say it, because it's again, a very personal thing, isn't it?
Oh, it's incredibly personal. And I think that, you know, confidence may be required, but I think really just permission is more required. And just because confidence is something that you build. It's a layered process, and it's something that you gain over time. But permission is something you can have right from the beginning to explore and to, you know, okay, I'm just going to write this, and it may or may not work this time, but it's all part of it. And it's a practice. It's kind of like yoga. It's not something that you're going to ever stop doing because, oh, I've written the best song in the world. I mean, that just doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. It's a practice. It's something that you want to do, every, as much as possible every day. And you just get better at it. And for me, it's been a great way to deal with emotion, you know, with stuff going on in my life. It's a great way to process all of that stuff.
Yeah. And so just looking at the, you know, some of the songs you've written on this record, things like Looking to You, Are You Ready to Say Goodbye, kind of very, very sort of personal, like both of those are about processing different kinds of things in your life. And Who Needs a Mind, which is more of an external processing of a thing, like much more sort of societal, political kind of statement almost. But they're very, like, they're dealing with sort of big themes.
Yes, but the thing that they all share is a personal, something that moved me personally, that made me want to talk about it. That's the common thread with all of those songs. And then it was interesting to me, the other night we played our album release show here in Nashville, and we did all the songs from the album, and we did Are You Ready to Say Goodbye, which is basically a song that I wrote because of the loss of my family and my siblings particularly. Every line is like based on a true thing that happened, and some of it's kind of unbelievable actually. So it couldn't be more personal, but I don't actually announce that when I perform it, for reasons I can talk about, but somebody came up, you know, somebody said something to me that they thought that song sounded timeless to them. And I thought that was pretty amazing, because it was such a personal thing for me, but I was glad that I was able to make it not, it's not that it, you don't want it to be personal, but you want it to be able to fit with as many different people as possible, hopefully they can relate to it. It took me about 5 years to write that song, but that's probably because, well, it is absolutely because it was incredibly personal. So that made me just take a really long time to say what I needed to say. And then, when a song's done, it's like, whether it's good or not, that's not what you're measuring. It's whether or not you've said what it is that you needed to say. And then it's for other people to decide whether they want to hear it or not. Cause that doesn't even determine whether it's good. It's just whether or not people want to hear it.
Yeah. And I had such a fascinating experience of listening to that song because, for whatever reason, I ended up reading the liner notes before listening to the music. I was just sort of flicking through, going, oh, who's in the band? Who do I go? I'm looking through the lyrics. And there's the lines that, and you pull them out at the end with this sort of dedication to your sister. But hey, sister, hear the angels sing. Better get your suitcase packed. Don't fill it with unimportant things because you ain't coming back. And I immediately thought this would be a slow, kind of quite lyrical, quite, you know, elegiac sort of end of life song. And then I heard it and it's the absolute opposite. It's like a train song. Do you know what I mean? It's like a traveling song. And I found that fascinating because it's a song about journeys, finishing a journey, which isn't really the end of a journey. And it has that, it feels like a song with movement. I know you just so presumed that a song about those kinds of things would be quite quiet and static. And it was just a really powerful experience hearing that. And it was so unusual because I'd read the lyrics first. And I love that it's like, it's got this sort of journey element to it. It feels like a traveling song, if that makes sense.
I actually love that, that idea. I call it my angry death song. There was never, ever my intention for it to ever be sort of like you say, sort of soft and angelic or whatever. Nope. Cause there was none of that going on in my heart. And now, you know, Allison and I she immediately loved when I pitched the song to her to record, she loved it. And then we ended up putting two banjos on it. You know, like not just one, but two banjos. And, like she and Eli are both playing. And so now we basically call it our angry death rock opera.
I love that.
But it's interesting that, you know, I think somebody reviewed it recently and they referred to it as a gospel song, which I kind of went, what? but I totally understand why someone might think that. But that's not, it's not, and it doesn't bother me that someone thinks that, but that's not where I was coming from. It's more just a statement of, we don't get to decide. For the most part, we don't get to decide when we walk away, and that kind of sucks.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And you mentioned Alison, and it's Alison Brown who produced the record. Really interested to sort of hear what that relationship was like in terms of, because production as a term for a record can mean so many different things. It can be very hands-on, very hands-off. It can be motivation. It can be song selection. It can be arrangement. It can be all of those things and none of those things. I'm curious to sort of find out how you two work together.
Oh, I love working with Allison. This is my second time to work in a situation where she's producing. And, of course we've known each other for years and years, but, and I've been on Compass Records for years, but, as I said, this is only the second time to work together in this capacity. And I enjoy it so much. She is, honestly, Allison can be any kind of producer. She could be an extremely hands-on producer, or she can also just sort of guide from 30,000 feet above and do it all like really, really well. In this case, we came in with the songs. She and I talked about the song choices, and I gave her a few that I had pared down, you know, more than I knew we would need for the album. And we discussed which ones were going to make it to the A-list. And then, having been with her before, I told the band, I was like, you know, we have arrangements for these songs. And I think they were pretty great arrangements. We had been working on them for a long time. We'd been touring them out on the road. But I said, when we get in there, she's gonna offer some changes. Like, she's gonna put these little tiny, like, diamonds here and there, meaning not diamonds like Nashville speak of, but just like sparkle. She's gonna do stuff to it, and it's gonna make it great. And I have no idea what it's gonna be, because she doesn't know right now what it's gonna be, because that's how she works. She'll just like come in, she'll listen to it, but I don't know how much she thinks about it before getting into the room, but she does it every time, and she'll just say, "How about if we did?" And then she has this great idea, and it's just this. Usually, it's just a minor change, or maybe it's just an addition to something that we're already doing. But it's always brilliant. But what I also like about her is that, at least when I'm working with her, you know, if I push back a little bit and say, no, I really think that, you know, I don't want to do this, or I feel like that's kind of, or could we maybe do this instead? She's also very, very, you know, willing to just she wants it to be, to represent me. And so I'm so grateful for that she doesn't try to push something on me that because at the end of the day, even though, you know, she's producing, at the end of the day, it's my name that's on it and that's coming out. So she gets that better than anybody.
Yeah, it's a fascinating role to play, to kind of drag people out of their comfort zone without dragging them into your own as a producer, and ending up sort of rewriting somebody else's story, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. Like, she has a way of adding, embellishing things. I've listened to lots of songs of other people that she's produced. She has a way of like embellishing what they're doing, making what they do stand out, without it sounding like it was her. And she also pushed me on my last record, Royal Traveler, to the point, you know, push me, meaning like just made me do some things that were outside of my comfort zone. But I went in with the mindset that I was going to do it. I was going to go and do what she said, because, I needed to be pushed and I needed to have that, challenge. And she did. And I was really grateful that she did. And in this case, she did it again, and she's always like, "We need more bass on this." And I was like, "No, we don't." She's like, "No, no, we do. We need, you know." She's like, "You're pretty well known for your bass playing. We need to put more bass on here." So I'm always the last one to think about that.
Well, that's really interesting, because, you know, as a bassist who is a band leader in a genre that is known for showcasing instrumental ability, like, knowing, because there are lots of lovely bits, there's bass sort of solo moments, like for us, for example, on Panhandle Countries, there's a kind of more extended bit where it's a bit of interplay between you and the guitar, and there's a couple of other bits which just very short bit, or like a little bit of slap bass that just stands out on its own, and so there's lots of reminders that this is an album from a bass player, but there are no kind of 64 bar extended bass solos. Do you know what I mean? It's that must be quite a hard balance to find, to constantly be reminded this is a bass led album without it becoming some sort of 70 minute jazz odyssey.
You know, to me, I feel like I'd like to think that I can shine as a player without having a solo. And that's what I'm trying to do. Like, to me, that's the hardest thing, is to just to play behind it. Like I said, being that support, playing the right notes. If I can do that really, really well, then I feel like I'm shining as a bass player. And we did a, you know, I knew I was going to take a solo on Panhandle Country because we chose that song for that. But a couple of those other songs where the bass got added, that was totally Allison. That was like, she's like, oh, no, you need to take a solo on this. And I would have never thought of doing it on those songs, except for On You Are You Ready to Say Goodbye. That felt right, because that was, again, emotionally, it felt like it was a part of how the expression of the song. And then also on Look Into You, I wouldn't have thought of putting a solo on there, but now I'm so glad. Every time we play it, I'm thrilled that we added that part with the solo, because again, it's almost like it's a voice. It's another expression for me to sort of, you know, it's a love song, and so it's a way for me to express that. And so I'm really glad that we came up with that. And when I say we, I mean Allison. But it wouldn't have been what I would have thought of on my own, I don't think, because I'm spending so too much time just thinking about, like, I listen to this album and I listen to every single bass note. And to me, that's a showcase for me, is like making sure that every single note is as good as it can possibly be and in the right place. Oh my gosh, timing, you know, it's got to be in the right place. And if it's not in the right place, why bother?
Yeah. And it's interesting. I can't remember where, if I read it or heard it in an interview with you a while ago, but you were talking about how you select people to play with. And obviously they need to be good musicians and they need to be people that you can go on the road with and not fall out with. But correct me if I'm wrong, but what I remember you saying was that you used to give people the quickest tune there was as a way of test, and then you sort of turned to giving them stuff with a load of space to see how they handled that. And that sort of really feels like it locks in with that idea of the supporting role and letting the playing, like in the context of the song, shine before worrying about what you then put on top of it.
Oh, absolutely. Wow. I'm so impressed that you remember that. I remember saying this very, very much, and I still believe it. And I believe that that was a turning point for me as a band leader, to when I discovered and came upon that realization that, you know, like I said, I had been giving potential players in the band like some complicated song to see if they could handle getting over the changes or whatever, but then I realized that what I really wanted was someone who could take a song and actually get that there might need to be huge spaces in between the notes, and it wasn't about being a hot licks player, and I needed somebody who could play technically, have technical prowess, of course, but I really needed someone who had the maturity as a player to play the way I would want to express, want to have my music expressed. And that's way more important. So I would go that route any day. And so, yeah, when I finally learned that lesson, that was a big level up in band leading 101 for me.
It's really interesting with that, just that theme of the supportive role of the band, like on your album as a band leader and a bass player, the idea that you're still thinking about primarily a supporting role. And I find that really interesting in context of there's so many guests on this record, instrumentalists, but also people singing harmony, people singing lead. You've got some great vocalists, some great fiddle players, and it not only that, I guess there's something really interesting about making your record and creating a space on that for other people to shine, which is not always the case with singers.
Oh, yeah. Again, though, it was a sort of a no-brainer. I knew I wanted to have guest singers on the record. To me, it's an opportunity to, well, honestly, to learn from them and to stretch myself and to challenge myself. But just also, it's kind of an indulgence because it's like these are people that I truly love, and so I get to have them come and play on, and sing with me. The first person I thought of for this album was Danny Paisley. I knew that when I started thinking about that this band was the idea of this band was something that I really wanted to do, that it was what I was working towards as the next project for myself. This was all pre-pandemic. I knew that I needed to do a collaboration with Danny because that sound of Danny Paisley and his father before him, Bob Paisley, and Ted Lundy, that sound was so ingrained into that early memory I have of bluegrass that I grew up on, the mid-Atlantic kind of approach. And so I knew I wanted to sing with Danny, and that was really easy. And boy, but what I didn't take into account was how much I would learn from just singing with him. Oh my gosh. It truly was like it was going to school, and it was the best school ever. And but it was that way for with Dudley and with Lori in very different ways. With Kathy as well, and Kathy Mattea, Lori Lewis, and Dudley Connell, all of like so. It's really just pure indulgence, just getting to sing with these people that I felt really would make the sound the way I wanted it to sound for the style of this record.
Yeah, and it sounds there's a through line through all those tracks. Whoever's singing with you, or whoever's singing kind of the lead vocal, there's such a. So going back to what I was saying at the beginning, really, it sounds like such a band record, with all of that going on, and I think one of the things I really enjoyed about the whole process of listening to this record and sort of reading a bit and thinking about it, and that idea of what we talked about at the beginning about this idea of a homecoming. And there's something in the idea of traveling physically, spiritually, emotionally, experimentally with your music, whatever, and coming home that implies a sort of settling down and a sort of coming back to settle down. But talking to you about becoming a singer, a songwriter, and a bass, it almost sounds like you're just getting started. Do you know what I mean? There's like it's a homecoming that is the kicking off point for a whole new, it sounds like there's so much energy building behind what you're doing. It doesn't sound like a settling down energy in the slightest.
I love hearing you say that because that's exactly how I feel. I'm so energized, and it's absolutely not settling down in any way. I'm already thinking about the next record, and I want it to be in this style. Like, in the past, I've often looked at records as, oh, what will I do this time? Kind of approach, and it might be kind of drastically different. But this time, I know exactly that I want to make a continuation of this sound that we created here. And yeah, no, it's I'm having too much fun.
And is that a sound that continues with this band, kind of the people you've got, that's the format for now.
I hope so. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And that's, I think that feel is, I don't know, it just feels right. Everything, the sweet spot of combining this sort of traditional sound with hopefully something that I can offer, like songs like Are You Ready to Say Goodbye, or even Look Into You, which is a bit more on the contemporary side, but still, to me, fits within that parameter. And so I feel like I'm enjoying finding that sweet spot. And I'm writing now that this record is sort of out and into the world. I feel like writing again. I haven't had time to write, but my head is clear enough now where I think I could actually start writing. And I've got a few songs that I think would be perfect for this next project that I just need to sit down and finish. So that feels really exciting when for me, I just have to have enough headspace. I'm very linear. And so it's like, okay, I can't think about that until I do this. Hmm. And so now that this, you know, we're in the stage of just getting the touring the record and all of the things are done with making the music. Now it's time to play this music for the people, but also to think about what's next.
Yeah, it's a funny old time, isn't it? When you record a record, there is inevitably a gap between you recording the record and the record coming out. And if you're a linear thinker, like you're done with the record. Like it's recorded, it's in the can, but it might be months before it comes out. And, you know, it must be a really interesting space to be in.
Oh, yeah. It's can be uncomfortable and just, I mean, it's often it's out of your hands, or the decisions that you make are wise and you're doing all the things that you know, reflect whatever's happening at the time and all of that's good. But yeah, it can be incredibly uncomfortable because it's, you're ready to move on, but you got to wait. And, you know, all of that stuff. But we made the right decision. We did wait and to put it out at this time. And it was absolutely, absolutely the right thing to do.
Well, it's a great record. I very much enjoyed listening to it. And I very much enjoyed talking to you about it. I hope it does really well for you. And I hope you enjoy the tour. But it's been great chatting to you. I've had a great time.
It's been wonderful. Thank you. I really enjoyed it.
Bluegrass Jam Along is proud to be sponsored by Collings Guitars and Mandolins, making some of the finest guitars and mandolins in the world since the 1970s. Visit collingsguitars.com and find out why.